Hey everybody, welcome to episode 2 of the podcast. I'm still alive. You're still alive, if you're listening to this. As you may know, if you listened to the first episode, my name's Alex, and I'm terrified. You've noticed. How could you not? You know, every few days I hear more and more horrific promises of doom, whether it be nuclear war, global warming field, natural superstorms, a second American Civil War, so on and so on, yada yada. Impending inevitable demise for the country / world. I have been fearing for my life quite some time now, as you might imagine. You may be too. You may very well be too. It's not like it's the only thing I ever think about. I'm quite busy being an art student, and I've always had a paranoid little voice in the back of my head whispering to me, getting me to worry about every little thing. But, you know, these days it's less of a whisper and more of a scream. I've also always been afraid of death, but as an artist, I've been able to comfort myself knowing that if I'm lucky, if I work hard, I'll achieve a type of immortality with the creations I leave behind, you know, like my legacy. But now the pressure's on. I could die any day. You know, I always thought I'd have an entire lifetime to leave a proper artistic legacy, but I don't know now. I don't know. I gotta have a plan B. So that's what this podcast is. I don't necessarily have an official name for this podcast yet, but it could be the plan B, the plan B show or something like that. I started this to share every idea that swims in my head that I don't have time to realize. You know, because I have a ton of ideas swirling around in my head all the time. Story ideas, tunes, painting ideas, animation ideas. I worry that none of these will come to fruition if I die prematurely. So that's what this podcast is to. Is supposed to get it out there into the ether, into the world, you know, so that I will have shared it with somebody, anybody who's listening. All right, I have 3 more ideas to share with you all. 2 stories, and then later I'm going to be playing on my cello. I'm going to be playing a tune that I've been that I developed a while ago, years ago, actually. I started developing it in middle school, and I finished developing it in high school, and it's been playing in my head ever since. It's just a melody right now. That's all it is. It's not a complete piece. There's no harmony or anything like that. There's no layering of any sort. It's just a melody. It's been playing in my head for years and years and years, over a decade. I'm not good with developing my tunes. I have a ton of melodies in my head. I don't have any complete pieces. That's how it goes for me. Yeah, so I'm going to be playing that later. But first, I'm going to tell you two stories. The first one is one of my favorite ones that I've thought up. I know that sounds a little insufferable, but I'm really excited to tell this story, and you know, hopefully one day I will be able to put it into the world in some fashion. I imagine it is ideally a movie or a video game. Now, I mean, both of those require lots of collaboration, but, I mean, I really don't know how to make a video game. I've never made a movie, obviously. 23, I'm still in college. I've never made a movie. I would like to make movies at some point. Oh, I would absolutely love to be a filmmaker. So, yeah, this would be ideally a movie or a video game. It's called Smithereens of Dove, and it's a commentary on adventure film and adventure game tropes. So basically, you start out following these three very archetypal heroes, leaving a castle to go journey across the land and defeat this evil entity. I don't know whether it's a wizard or a lord or whatever, but it's this evil dude totally across the on the other side of the land, and he's up to evil deeds of some vague cliche type or another. So they get on their horses and they gallop out of the kingdom and across the lands, and they stop for the night at this quaint little town called Dove. But little do they know that two of the bad guys' henchmen had been tailing them. And in the middle of the night, there's a scuffle. It's more than a scuffle. It's our three heroes against these two, like, dark magic henchmen. And it takes place, like, in the middle of this town square. And, oh, there's so much destruction. There are explosions. There's crashes and everything. And when the rubble and the smoke and the haze clears, the three heroes stand battle-scarred but victorious. And then they promptly are on their merry way to continue their quest. And then we never see them again. So, like, first, we're with them for, like, the first 15 minutes, say if it's a movie, we're with them for the first 15 minutes, and then we never see or hear from them again. And you get just attached enough to them so that it's kind of jarring as an audience member. And you are, for the rest of the, I guess, if it's a film, for the rest of the film, you are, you focus in on this family in the village who, and it, for the rest of the time, it's just this very sobering, severe family drama, kind of like in an Italian neorealist style. Because they're living in the wake of this, to them, this horrifying disaster that has laid bare a lot of their town. They had a house, and they had a little business, and they were like connected, and their business, their livelihood was completely destroyed in the battle, and the town. And the main focus, the like foreground focus, is on this family's issues, And then the background focus, the backdrop, is like the town's issues. So like the all this destruction that's caught, the town is in economic turmoil and political upheaval, and there's like a power gap, and several different people are vying for control of the city, and it was a well run, fair for fantasy times, fair quality of life in that little town, but and it was one run kind of fairly and pretty well, but now a bunch of malicious individuals are trying to take advantage of everything and trying to gain political mileage in the wake of this disaster. And the family is, they lost a few members of their family, and they lost a lot of friends too. And their house is somewhat there. Their house is mostly still there. You know, they can technically still live in their house. Their business is totally gone. You see the strain on every single relationship. You focus on every relationship, the mother and the father. You see strain in their once loving marriage. There's strain between the young son, who is kind of like the main character. It's an ensemble piece, but he's like the kind of, if there is a main character for the rest of the story, after the heroes leave, then he is it. We actually first see him the day before when the heroes arrive in the town. You know, they're kind of given this grand welcome, and everyone's in awe of them. But it zooms in on this focuses in on this young boy who is totally awestruck by these heroes, and he thinks they're so cool. And then, of course, they basically destroy the whole town. And so he's obviously wrestling with that. He's fairly disillusioned. He spends his days kind of wandering around the ruins of the city and looking at other people's problems, and then coming back at night and dealing with his own family's problems. He gets a lot of free time because he's young enough that his parents weren't necessarily like having him help out in the family business yet, but his older sister is really strained because she was like going to like start she was actually helping the parents a lot with the family business. And now the parents are being really hard on her. In a way, it kind of brings him and his sister together, because they're not used to their parents being so hard on them. I don't exactly know what like a kind of resolution would be, and I've got to figure out some way to like tie in the B storyline of the certain individuals vying for political power and the family drama aspect of it. I'm not exactly sure how I'll do that, but I think there will be some small form of justice in the end. Just because, like, I've put the audience through the ringer for the majority of the film. It's absolutely like a commentary on adventure tropes. Heroes, they go from like village to village and like town to town and kingdom to kingdom and whatnot on their epic quests. But you don't stay with those places. You leave with the heroes. But, you know, more often than not, they leave some form of destruction in their wake, but you'd never, like, or you seldom stay in those places. You go with the main characters. But, so I just wanted to have the focus be on someone else. You know, have a different perspective. Say something about the neglected. I like neglected characters. I like focusing on characters that are not that are ignored by most stories. And this is a prime example of that. So yeah, there's that story. I have another story that I've been thinking around for a while. This is very different. This is a zany comedy. It's not completely out there, but it's somewhat grounded. But it is fairly silly. And this is one of those like comedies where they would just, where you just keep, it keeps proving you wrong that it can be more and more and more ridiculous and extreme. Like every beat or so, it gets more ridiculous, more ridiculous, more ridiculous. So I should probably say what the premise is. It's called the filler title. I'm not totally 100% on this title, but so far it's called Skyrocket. And it's a movie about Hollywood. The main characters are this very particular auteur director, and this absolutely hapless producer, and this the star of the film that is being made. Now, this auteur, he's very demanding, like infamously so, and the producer knew this going in, but he wasn't quite ready for it anyway. And in the actor's audition, he had this certain je ne sais quoi. He had no experience. He was basically off the street. But something clicked with him. Something clicked for the auteur, and he was absolutely mesmerized by the performance, and he demanded that there could be no one for the part but this guy. Now, this was already like the movie. It's like a totally original idea, and it's somewhat avant-garde. But it's this director's first studio film. He's gotten a lot of indie hits in the past, but this is his first studio film, and this studio is in danger of going under. So that's why the producer is hapless. This movie has got to do well. This like medium small studio is finished. So the higher ups are like really putting pressure on this guy. And he keeps having to like, he and the auteur keep butting heads. But he understands. He was in the audition too, and he saw how good that guy was. So he understands eventually that they have to have this guy. So he reluctantly agrees to that. But he does also get finally the auteur to understand that this movie has to do well. The auteur never thinks from a money standpoint. But he does want to keep making movies. And he has more extravagant and more extravagant ideas for his films, so he knows he needs to have a studio backing him in order to get the funding he needs for his interesting ideas. So he does eventually realize that this movie has to do well. So they work together. They have to work together to make this absolute nobody of an actor an overnight star, an overnight superstar, mega star, because that's the only thing they can bank this movie on, because it's an original idea. It's not based on anything. It's a kind of avant-garde film. It's not like a super action-packed adventure or anything like that. So they have to bank on star power. But this guy is an absolute nobody. So they have to make him a somebody. And so basically, hijinks ensue. The auteur and the producer keep setting up these ridiculous schemes for this actor to try to like make him known to the public, you know, and with the philosophy of like any publicity is good publicity, and you know they want to make him like a viral sensation and stuff like that. It's not like a cynical film. There's a cynical vein, but it's not a completely cynical film. It's fairly fun loving, and it's in the end a love letter to cinema. So they just try to like stage all these stunts with him, all these appearances, and it just gets more ridiculous and more ridiculous. They keep ratcheting up the tension and the laughs in that way. I don't really exactly know how it would conclude, but this would definitely have like a happy ending. Like everything would at least mostly work out and maybe unexpectedly. Maybe not quite the way they planned, of course, but things would work out in some way, some wacky way. Just a very fun film with a bit of a Hollywood critique, a bit of a film industry critique, but that would definitely be play second fiddle to like the overall fun of the film, and like it would definitely be all about like the chemistry of the three leads, the odd, demanding filmmaker, the completely hapless, anxious producer, and the kind of bewildered, kind of like doe in the headlights actor. Yeah, it, winning combination, I guess. I don't know. I think that's it for my two stories. And that would definitely be a movie. That last one. That's it for my two stories. And I guess it's now time for me to play my cello for y'all. All right, I'm excited. Hope you all are excited too. Thanks for listening, everybody. I think that's the end of the podcast. Hopefully I get to make more than two episodes of this. I don't know if I will. But one can dream. I hope you liked the little intro music I came up with there at the beginning. That's just something I came up with specifically for this. That's not one of the previously mentioned tunes that I've been working on for a while. I came up with that specifically for this. Let's see. Next episode, if there is one, I will do two more stories and another cello tune, I think. Yes. Another one of my most favorite, longest, probably my second oldest tune that I've ever come up with. Yeah, yeah. The one I played today was the oldest one, and I'll play next hopefully next time, I will play that one, yes. Alright, so, be creative, be bold, but be very afraid. Alright.